Welcome to Leadership Conversations with Josh Reich and Casey Cease. We have the conversations leaders want to have so they can win at leadership. Now, on to our show. And welcome back to another episode of Leadership Conversations. This is Casey Cease along with my co-host Josh Reich. And today we have a special guest with us today, my friend, our friend, Greg Atkinson. Greg, how's it going, man?
Doing good. Honored to be with you guys.
Greg, why don't you take a moment, and many people know you, but why don't you share a little bit about yourself, your calling, what you do, what you've done, anything that would be pertinent to our listeners, and then we'll dive into the topic at hand today.
Sure. Well, I'm 42 years old, married with three teenage kids, started in ministry on a church staff, my first church in February of 1994 at the age of 18. So fast forward 24 years serving in ministry in some capacity. Now I'm no longer on a church staff, but I work with pastors globally through a nonprofit. And then I also do a lot of consulting throughout North America with churches in the areas of first impressions and hospitality. And I do some leadership coaching and work with pastors that are trying to revitalize an existing church, an established church, and then also some church planters.
Awesome. Well, I know you have a lot of experience. You've been exponential. You've been, you name the conference. Greg's either been there, spoken at it, taught it, led it, whatever. Greg's been around. So we're very fortunate to have Greg on the podcast today. And today we're going to spend some time talking about one of your areas of expertise, which is first impressions in a church. And whether you're listening to this and you're a leader in the church, or you're just a member of a church, or you're a pastor or staff member, this is going to be an important topic for you to discuss, because I think for many of us, it can become an afterthought, if you will, or because we feel comfortable or our people feel comfortable, then we're assuming that that's enough for other people who are going to come as well. So Greg, why don't you give us a little bit of background of what led you kind of into this field of further study? How did you realize it became something, or how did you realize it was something that you're very passionate about and had something to say?
Well, part of it is just the way I'm wired. My nature is very hospitable, very generous, very gracious. It's just my DNA. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I mean, it's just the way I'm wired. I'm naturally hospitable. But where it came to life for me was about a decade ago, I was coaching church planters. And one of my mentors said, "Greg, you need to be a secret shopper." And I said, "Why do you say that?" And he said, "Well, you've got a good grasp on the church and on worship and leadership." He said, "I'm going to write you your first endorsement." And he sent out a huge email and said, "You need to hire Greg." And so he kind of lit a fire under me, or actually he just poured gasoline on a fire that was there and I didn't realize it. And then as I look back over the course of my life, I was with a church leader recently and I did something, I don't remember what it was, but he looked at me and said, "Wow, you're doing such and such." And I said, "Dude, hospitality is so much bigger than ushers and greeters." I said, It's a way of life. I mean, we have had people stay at our house for months. I've had two recovering alcoholics stay in our house. We had a guest room. They stayed with us, one for 3 months, one for 4 or 5 months. I like to host people in our house, have people over. My kids saw me doing something the other day, and I just took a moment to teach them a little life lesson of, this is a way of life. But, we had this first impressions conference and I tried to say over and over that it's just so much deeper and richer than, do you have ushers? Do you have a greeter at the door? Do you have people in the parking lot with vests or holding a sign? That's great. And I love churches that do that and create welcoming environments. But theologically, as a Christ follower, we're called to be hospitable. And Leviticus talks about welcome the stranger. Some translations say welcome the newcomer. All throughout the New Testament, be hospitable, practice hospitality. You guys, we've talked before about how the qualifications of an elder or pastor in Timothy and Titus to be hospitable. It's the mark of a Christ follower. It's a qualification for leadership and being a pastor. And so I'm pretty passionate about it. I think we need to take it seriously. Now, there are some practical things we can talk about in a little bit about how this fleshes out on a Sunday morning. But I just wanted to start by saying it's my heart, it's my DNA, and I truly, truly believe it's the mark of a Christ follower.
You know, I think, Greg, one of the things I've appreciated about getting to know you is just that heart of hospitality behind first impressions or guest services, whatever you call it. I know everyone's got kind of different names for it, but really framing it that way, because I feel like a lot of times people will talk about it as just a way to grow your church, or this is just a way to be attractional. But really framing it that way, I think, gives a really important foundation for it. And so like, as you apply that then, you know, and as you think through what hospitality looks like in a church, what does that look like, kind of more expansively past ushers and greeters?
Yeah. Well, you know, we talked about in a session that you guys both did for the First Impressions Conference, that it starts with the lead pastor and the lead pastor's heart. You know, is he gracious? Is he compassionate? Is he kind and caring and hospitable? And then that gets infused down into the staff, the leaders, the lay leaders. You know, one of our speakers at this conference said people can smell fake. And so when it comes to, hey, just stand there and smile, just stand there and greet people, if it's not genuine, if it's not authentic, people can sense that, they can smell that. And so when a pastor leads with a vision and a heart of anybody's welcome here, everybody's welcome, they can come hear the good news of the gospel is for all, and let's make sure, as Mark Waltz has said, that they know they matter to us before they hear they matter to God. That's one of his quotes in his book, First Impressions. They need to know they matter to us before they hear they matter to God. When I come sit in your auditorium with you, Josh and Casey, I'm going to hear the good news preach. I'm going to hear the gospel preach. You guys are phenomenal leaders and communicators and theologians in your own right. But if I've had a negative experience from the parking lot in, and I don't know that I matter to you before I hear I matter to God, I may check out, I may tune out, I may walk out.
Yeah.
That happens. Sometimes we've all been in a restaurant where we sit down and it's like, nah, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to get up and leave. I've taken my kids out of restaurants. I've sat down and been ignored. And I've said to a friend, we will watch the waitress just walk by and totally ignore us. And I'm like, are we invisible? Like, what is going on? Is anybody going to come take our order? And we just got up and walked out. I just today was in a McAllister's to get a sweet tea. I was in a rush, just wanted to stop in. They have really good sweet tea here in the South. I was going to get a tea. And we were waiting in this long line, and there was no server anywhere in sight. Nobody, no cashier, nobody at the register. And we just stood there, and I turned around and walked out. It just, and I don't mean that in a consumeristic way. I mean, we should show that we care. Yeah. And so that starts with the leadership. And then Josh, you know, you and I were talking and you said something that I thought was dead on. And that is, when we look to staff these positions and when we look to form teams of greeters and ushers, it's not always the most friendly greeter that should lead the ministry. And I didn't say that. You said that. And I resonate with that. Yeah. We all know people that are super friendly, super, super smiling and friendly and excited and bouncing off the walls, but they probably don't make the best leader for that team. And yeah. So if you have somebody that can have a one-on-one meeting with you as the lead pastor, capture your heart, embrace the vision, carry the DNA, and say, this is who we are as a church, and then let them schedule and organize and train and recruit those friendly people that smile a lot and are very welcoming. But that's probably, and I just resonate with what you said, Josh, in an earlier meeting, it's probably not the person to lead the team.
Yeah.
But finding those leaders, having some one-on-one time as the pastor where you sit down and say, here's my vision. Here's what I want people to experience when they drive onto the parking lot, when they walk through the halls of our church, walk through the doors. Here's what we want them to experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sorry, Josh. No, we're so excited to have fresh meat here on the Leadership Conversation podcast that we're jumping on here. But I wanted to ask you, like, we do these surveys, or we at least in the past did, of, you know, after you visited, if you gave us your information, we'd ask you to fill out a brief survey, first impressions, et cetera. How would you encourage a leader or a pastor to handle feedback that no one said hello to me, no one said hi, I didn't feel connected or welcome? Because we hear that less and less. But how would you coach a pastor? Let's say you've gone to visit and done one of your secret chopper things, like you do when you consult a church. What would you tell a pastor to, like, how do I fix that? I mean, that's the first question I want to ask typically when things go poorly or when I get feedback like that. I used to be way more reactionary. When we were smaller, it was like, oh my gosh, we're going to close. But but what are some practical ways to begin addressing that, though, as well?
Yeah, and by the way, I just came out with a brand new resource. It's in beta. We haven't launched yet, but it's a guest survey for pastors and for church leaders. If you go to guestsurvey.church, you can sign up for updates and find out when it's released. It's not even come out yet, but I think evaluation is key, and I think surveys are great. When I do that, I look across the board. Are we a welcoming church? I evaluate. Like on our guest survey, we have on a scale of 1 to 10, what did you think of the music? What was the kids' check-in experience like? How was the sermon? How are we as a welcoming church overall? And then I use that as an evaluation, monthly and quarterly and yearly, to sit down with my staff and say, hey, the children's ministry is ranked a 3 all year long. Consistently, we have averaged a 3 in kids' ministry. We've got to have a hard conversation. But to getting back to what you said, as far as when you get that kind of feedback, to use Casey, a term I've heard you say before, and Josh as well, in another context, embrace it. It's looking in a mirror of, this is how we are perceived. This is what people think of us. Let's embrace it. Let's tackle it, and let's move in a positive direction. Let's move forward. And so, if somebody comes and they say, I didn't feel welcome, you know, the reaction shouldn't be, or you should have, it should be, okay, what can we do to address this? As a campus pastor, I used to offer to buy people coffee and to sit down with them and say, tell us, what was your experience like? How can we improve? What did you think of the day? I would send out, just like you guys, I would send out a first-time guest note or email or handwritten note. And in that, I would say, I want to buy you a cup of coffee. I dare you to take me up on it. And then as a second-time guest, I would follow up with something else. But as a first-time guest, I would always say, please let me buy you a cup of coffee, because I really wanted to know what they thought. And, if with any great organization, evaluation is key. Anything that takes place around the world, any major event, concert, tour, production, and then all the way down to a local church level on a Sunday, there should be some kind of evaluation of how did things go, and then having the freedom for a staff person to speak into different things and to be able to say, you know what, I think this was missing the mark. I think we can improve here. But I would just embrace it. If you get negative feedback, tackle it and address it.
Yeah, one of the things we ask guests at our first step, of starting point, is we ask them, what do they love about our church as a guest? And then what things aren't clear as a guest? And that's been a really helpful thing for our church to just, because when you're inside of a church, everything is clear to you. You know what the small groups are for and when they meet and all of that. But we've heard some really good feedback when a guest will say, well, this didn't make any sense, or I didn't understand this over here. And that's just sometimes hard to hear, but also really helpful to hear. And so then, Greg, as you think about that, then what are some of the things? Because one of the questions Casey and I get a lot is, how does a first-time guest become a second-time guest, a third-time guest? How do they get plugged in and engaged at the church? Carrie Newhoff talks a lot about just engagement. being the key to your church. So as you've just traveled around, what does that process look like, that path for people to come back? You know, I remember growing up in a church, a small group was the first step from a Sunday morning, but that's an enormous step for people, you know, to go to somebody's house so that they've never been to. And, you know, so what are some of the keys of seeing a guest come back and then getting engaged in the church?
Yeah. Engagement is a key word. Kerry Newhoff has been beating that drum. Andy Stanley has been beating that drum. You know, it is just not realistic in the world we live in when somebody decides to get plugged into a church that they're going to show up 52 Sundays a year. It's just not going to happen. It will not happen. It just will not happen. And so we look at what does engagement look like? What does it mean to be a part of the body? What does it mean to be a partner or a member or whatever owner, whatever term your church may use? But, you know, but it starts with the first time guest turning into a second time guest. And there are so many factors that play into that. I wrote a book about that. Danny Franks wrote a book about that. Mark Waltz wrote a book about that. Nelson Searcy has. There's so many great things out there. Jason Young from North Point has a brand new book coming out called The Comeback Effect. You can pre-order it now. And I love pointing people to resources because it doesn't have to be something I've written. There's a lot of good stuff out there. But The Comeback Effect is all about that. How do we get people to come back? One of the things that Nelson Searcy talks about in his book Fusion is that when they come back for that second time visit, they are 80% more likely to get plugged in and eventually make a decision for Christ. And you guys know as lead pastors, oftentimes that first time guest may not make a decision, some kind of commitment. There's so much going on in their mind, in their heart. They're skeptical, they're nervous, they're anxious, they're overwhelmed, they're lost. They don't know where this is or this is. Are my kids going to be okay? That room looked a little sketchy. I don't know if they're going to be safe. And their mind is just racing with so many thoughts that they really can't focus and tune in on the message. And so there's things that we do from first impressions, hospitality, children's ministry, check-in, environment, facilities, music, worship, preaching. There's so many factors, security. I've talked about that before. People feeling safe. There are so many dynamics that go into a guest thinking, I like that. I'll come back a second time. Now, something that Nelson Searcy said before is the more unchurched the person is, the longer it takes them to come back. Meaning they may visit your church the first week of the month and they may not come back until the third or fourth. It takes them a while to process. What I look for is consistency. If they come on the first week of the month, is it still solid and consistent and done with excellence on the fourth week of the month? And when they come back for that second time, whether they realize it or not, they have made a spiritual decision. And we have to steward that well. I remember years ago reading Spurgeon's book on the Holy Spirit. And he talked about when somebody asks a spiritual question, the Holy Spirit's at work. When somebody says, would you pray for me? The Holy Spirit's at work. When somebody comes up and says, hey, you're a Christian, aren't you? And then they follow it up with a question. The Holy Spirit is at work. And so as you know, God is drawing people to himself. When a guest comes back for a first time, it's a spiritual decision. When they come back for a second time, they have made a huge spiritual decision. When they give for the first time, that's a huge spiritual decision. Like you said, if you show up at somebody's house that you've never been to before and go to a small group, that's a spiritual decision. Yeah. And so we as leaders and facilitators and hosts, lead pastors, we have to steward that well. And so I look for excellence. Excellence transcends, I've said for years, it doesn't matter if you're a small church, portable church, large church, what denomination, what style, if you're traditional, blended, contemporary, modern. Excellence transcends. Do things with excellence and then do it consistently with excellence. You know, when it comes to church planting, I know you guys work a lot with church plants. So many times they promise something they can't deliver. You know, these, you see churches that send out these direct mail pieces that have the stock photo of a multi-ethnic picture of people, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, young and old, smiling and waving. And then they show up at your church and it's a bunch of middle-aged white people. And it's like, well, where's the dude from the postcard? You know, I wrote a chapter in one of my early books, if you promise, you better deliver. And so I would just not use stock photos. Take pictures of your own people. But if you show a direct mail piece or a Facebook ad that shows a multi-ethnic blend and they show up and it's a bunch of white people, it's not consistent. It's not authentic. It's not genuine. And so knocking it out of the park means consistency. You don't have to hit a home run every week, but you do have to hit. You do have to get up to bat. And so I think making sure that since people aren't going to come all four Sundays in a month, realistically, is the first and the third and the fourth just as solid if they miss the second. And so shoot for consistency. There are a lot of factors that determine whether or not you retain a guest. And some of it, as you guys well know, because I know what you practice at your church, some of it takes place after Sunday morning. Meaning your assimilation, your follow-up, your letter to them, your phone call, your email, your survey. Some of it is them getting a letter in the mail on Thursday saying, oh, that's nice. They said that they were glad I came and they hope I come back. That's pretty cool. Or, hey, my kid just got a postcard from their children's ministry leader saying it was so good having you in kids ministry. That's pretty neat. I think we'll try them out again. So some of it takes place post-Sunday.
No, that's really good. You know, one of the questions that I get a lot, and I'd love to hear just some of your thoughts on it, as our world has become more and more engaged on social media, what does that first impression look like? What does a good first impression look like on Instagram, Facebook, your website? What does a bad first impression look like, especially for a church, you know, like ours that doesn't have we don't have a videographer on staff. We don't have a social media director on staff. And most of the time it's just a lead pastor doing it. What does that look like? Just good and bad.
You're probably going to not like hearing this word again. When it comes to social media, I would say consistency, just that you post regularly, that your website and your social media channels are dynamic. They're not static. And so, a lot of times when I evaluate churches and I do an online presence evaluation, I'll pull up, they have on their website, they have all the social media icons. So you can click on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And then just recently I clicked on a Twitter and they haven't posted since 2016. And I said, well, you should probably take the Twitter icon off your website because you're pointing them to something you don't use anymore. And so Instagram is a matter of knowing how to use it. Instagram is pictures, pictures, pictures. And so if you have a volunteer that can go around and take a picture on a Sunday morning of worship and parking lot team and greeters greeting, and you have to be careful with kids ministry, but it can be done, even if it's the back of kids watching a lesson being taught. But, you know, different things throughout your community, social media, when it comes to Facebook, should be engaging. You want to strive for engagement. And so you have to balance information with inspiration. If your social media channels are broadcast only, where it's come to this, announce this, be at this, don't forget this. If it's just information, people aren't going to engage. They're going to tune it out. They're not going to follow you anymore. But if it's inspiration, hey, check out this scripture, check out this quote, check out this 30-second highlight video from Casey from Sunday, or one thing that I love doing is highlighting volunteers. You know, here's our volunteer of the week. Meet Bob. Bob serves in fifth grade, and Bob has been serving in fifth grade for 3 years. And here's a picture of Bob. And yeah,
make sure you get permission though, because down here in Texas, everybody is so private. You know, they don't want the man.
No. What I'm saying is, you have looked Bob in the eye, saying, "Can I take your picture? Yeah, and would you fill out this blank? I love serving in fifth grade because," and then he actually fills it out. And so that's what we did when I was a pastor, as a spotlight highlight of the week. is I would say, Bob, why do you love serving in kids ministry? And then he would write a little quote and we would post that underneath his picture and we would send it out in the newsletter. You know, morale and momentum are huge. Craig Rochelle said that for years, morale and momentum. And so if you can keep your volunteers engaged and passionate about serving, that's high morale. And then when God moves and God does what only he can do, the momentum takes off. And it's a precious, precious, priceless thing when that momentum is going strong. And so, but a big part of that is morale and encouraging your volunteers, sending your volunteers thank you notes, not just guests, but your volunteers and your leaders, your lay leaders, send them thank you notes. But on Facebook, I would try for engagement, and that means responding to comments, being open to discussion. They may disagree with something you said and handling that graciously and having a dialogue. When it comes to a website, I look for an I'm new page or a what to expect page or a plan your visit page, which is getting very popular these days. A lot of churches are doing a plan your visit model where they click on a button and it says, hey, be sure to arrive 15 minutes early. We have guest parking. Look for that. Take your kids to check in. We have procedures put in place for security where we're going to get your information, put it in a database. We'll give you a sticker so that only you can check out your kid and, you know, kind of giving people what to expect and overview. And a couple things that does, one, it puts their mind at ease. It gets rid of some of the apprehension and anxiousness and nervousness. Two, it lets them know you're expecting them. And the biggest thing I could say, if you remember anything, is prepare for guests. Company's coming. Are you ready? Prepare for guests. And you will be surprised how people respond to realizing that they were expected. The best churches that I have worked with across the country prepare for and expect guests. When I go work with an amazing church, they have so prepared for guests. It's just mind blowing. They really take into account when I come on the campus, this could be confusing. We need a sign here. We need somebody standing here pointing to this, to where the auditorium is, or we need somebody like Josh said at your church. They actually walk you in to the kids ministry. They meet you at the door and they walk you and guide you somewhere. And so, being prepared for guests is huge. I heard Jason Moore say recently, you can't wait until they show up to be poised for guests. That's too late. And so, it's the meeting before the meeting, John Maxwell, having a meeting with your team and saying, guys, every Sunday is somebody's first Sunday or potentially somebody's first Sunday. We need to be prepared. And then as leaders, this is so important. Always cast the why before the what. Don't just say we need somebody at the west doors. That's not good enough. We need you at the door, because when you're at the door and they walk in and they're nervous and they meet your eyes and they see you smile and say, welcome to Grace Church, they get excited and they feel like you've expected them and you're prepared for them. And then you walk them in and say, I see you have kids. Can I show you where the check-in is? Let me walk you over there. They feel welcomed and loved and honored. And those are biblical things. We should honor guests. We should care. We should be kind. All the fruit of the Spirit should just ooze out of us. We should be caring and compassionate and kind and gentle. And so, but as leaders, whether you be a lead pastor or a team lead or a staff member, cast the why before the what. Always teach people this is why it matters.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you said, it's a practice that we did as a church, is we sat down as a team and talked through the questions that a guest has before they arrive. And we made a list of like 8 to 10 things that we thought people would want to know before they arrive. You know, we put them on our website, but then we also tried to think through how can we engage that and answer those questions on a Sunday morning when they get there, you know, so that they're able to have just a great experience. You know, one of the things I'm curious about is for pastors, you know, when you preach and, you know, whether it's during the welcome or communion, what are some just best practices of engaging guests, whether they have a church background or not, in the sermon, in the welcome, the offering time, the communion time, Just what are some good practices that you've seen with that?
Yeah, well, I've seen a lot, and then I've asked a lot of questions like you guys. I think leaders ask questions. Andy Stanley said that for years. But I've seen a lot in my travels. I want to encourage your people, if they haven't already, check out firstimpressionsconference.com because we have some resources and some archived videos from this year's conference that dive into this. But two things that I will hit on that was covered in the conference. One, giving talks. The offering time can make or break you. I worked with a church last year. I'm not going to say where, but it's a decent-sized church, and they blew it at the offering time. The offering setup was 20 minutes. 20 minutes of this pastor preaching about giving. This was not his sermon. This was the offering setup. And then he had everybody stand when they had given. He said, once you have given, stand and hold your phone up, showing that you have given electronically. Hold your phone up in the air. And I'm sitting down, looking around, thinking, am I supposed to stand? Because I haven't given anything, but I'm the only one seated right now. And so did your evaluation, I said, I would not come back simply because of the way you handled the offering. And they were like, what? I said, your offering was so believer-focused, so high pressure, that I would never come back. And this was
they're like, we brought in $4 million, so so what? Buy some.
This is a church that was plateaued for 10 years. Yeah. They ran 1,800 for 10 years, and they said, we want to break through this plateau. I said, well, stop doing a 20-minute offering talk. So they blew it with the offering. And then second, you mentioned communion, and you can blow it at communion. My friend Jason Moore said, be careful of the really, really, really short version of communion. And by that, I mean you stand up and say, we want to eat his flesh and drink his blood. Let's go. And you just dive right in. And there's no explanation. No, hey, let me tell you what this meant. Let me tell you about what Jesus. There's no, it's just, we're going to eat his flesh, drink his blood. Take it. Here you go. You have to be careful about the really, really, really short version of communion. Just the way you present that, the way you set it up, you can blow it with communion. You can blow it with the offering. You know, most guests, and I mean like 99%, most guests are not going to give. And so when you talk about offering, you're talking to your core, you're talking to your members, your partners. And most of them, if they are truly bought in and they're a member, they're probably going to give online. And so then you have to take in account, giving is a part of worship, absolutely. But how do we present this in a way, realizing that your guests aren't giving and your core has already given online? So how do we present this? And just think through, always think through everything. The best leaders that I've come in contact with and that I interviewed for the First Impressions Conference had a well thought out strategy. They had thought through every part of it, the why before the what. Like you said, Josh, they've asked a lot of questions. What would a guest think of this? What would they think of this? And so.
So would you talk about offering every week then? You know, like, because as you talk about cycling announcements and stuff,
on the church. Some churches pass a plate. Some have a box in the back. I don't have a preference either way because I just don't. I've been in churches that do both. I have found that it's important when we talk about morale, momentum, to talk about where money goes. And so I do think it helps to say, hey, when you give, your generosity allowed us to scholarship 15 kids to summer camp, or your generosity allowed us to send a team to Guatemala. I think that's important. I think it's a good thing. But that can take a minute. It could take 60 seconds to say, hey.
One thing that we found helpful with that, Greg, is that we tell first-time guests, like, hey, your gift to us is placed in the communication card. In the basket as it comes by, that would be a huge blessing to us. You know, these resources that you generously give are utilized for us to continue ministering to our community, et cetera, et cetera. And I found that, you know, I've never had someone say, you know, and we've had some honest feedback of why people won't come back, but I've never had one say, well, you know, the offering thing. I am going to try the 20-minute offering pitch with the cell phones this week just to see if we get an uptick in our giving. But
hey, man, it might work in Texas.
Well, oil prices are up, so
pastors, you can appreciate this, and it helps us to laugh at ourselves. But they were in a capital campaign; they were in a building project.
Oh man! Yeah.
But your guest shouldn't have to take the heat of that.
That's a member meeting.
Building project, so he's going to speak on giving for 20 minutes before his sermon. So there's other ways to do that and cast vision. You know, I've said for years, leaders have to communicate in three ways: large group from the states, small group to teams of leaders in small groups, and one-on-one. That's when you're, that's your coffee, your breakfast, your lunch, your dinners. You sit down with Bob and Diane. You say, Bob and Diane, I need you to do this. I need you to be at this. I need you to be prepared for this. I need you to work on this. Those are the one-on-one. Small group is casting vision to your volunteers and leaders. Hey guys, here's the why before the what. Here's why this matters. Large group is from the stage. The problem a lot of churches do is they try to do everything from the stage. And so much can be done in small group or one-on-one. Sometimes people will make an announcement to a group of people when they really are speaking to Bob and only Bob, but they're trying to do it in front of 50 people and they're trying to pin Bob to the wall. Just take Bob to breakfast and go have a one-on-one conversation with Bob. Don't make 50 volunteers sit through something that you've aimed at one person. And so large group, small group, one-on-one, the way we communicate. But another way that churches blow it is the announcement time. We don't need 20-minute announcements either. You know, Phil Battle, who's a genius when it comes to communications, he said no guest, no member walks away from church saying, wasn't the announcements great? Wasn't that awesome? Like, you know, he said staff members get excited about announcements, but the people don't. And so I go back to something that leaders like Dave Ferguson and Andy Stanley have said for years. One thing, one big idea, one thing. Hey, guys, I want to let you know that next week we have a dinner with the pastor or pizza with the pastor. We hope you'll come out and join us for that. If you're interested in checking us out, join us for dinner with the pastor. Everything else you can find at gracechurch.org. And always point them to the website. It also helps to have a different voice, a different person give the announcements. They've just listened to you preach 30 to 40 minutes. They are tuning your voice out. They don't want to hear you make announcements afterwards. And so it helps to maybe have your youth pastor or a female or somebody else come up and say, hey, we want to make sure you know this is going on this week. For everything else, go to gracechurch.org. But it's a different tone, a different pitch, a different frequency of voice, and it breaks it up because they've just heard you for 30 to 40 minutes. But you can blow it with announcements. So I would do one thing, one big idea. It's kind of like if I were to say, hey, I want you to memorize my phone number, and I tell it to you, you would lock it in and you'd say, okay, got it. And I'd say, now I want you to memorize my wife's and my daughter Grace and my son Tommy and my daughter Katie. Hit me with all five back. You say, I can't remember all five. You could remember the one if I just gave you mine. And so it's the same way with announcements. Give people one thing, one call to action. Another train of thought that I've heard people speak on is people can only do so many calls to action. Casey, you know this with some of your work. You can only have so many calls to action. And so if you stand up at the end of a service and you give your people 10 calls to action, there's no way they can do it. So you could blow it at the offering, you could blow it at communion, you could blow it at announcements. And why that's important is you may have preached your heart out. You may have had a solid, exegetical, powerful word of truth. You've preached your heart out, but the offering blew it, or so-and-so doing the announcements blew it, or people were so freaked out by the way you presented communion that they think you're a cult and they don't want to ever come back. You can blow it in a number of ways. And so what I encourage lead pastors to think of is don't get into these silos of, well, my sermon was okay. That's all that matters. No, it's a piece of a large, large pie. People are going to experience you online, like Josh said, your website, your social media. They're going to have an experience when they enter the parking lot. They're going to have experience when they walk through the doors. They're going to have an experience when they check in their kids at Kids Check In. They're going to have an experience and memory with the music, with the announcements, with the offering. And yes, they're going to remember your sermon, but it is not the only thing that will factor in should we come back for a second visit. And like I said, some of it happens afterwards, the note they get in the mail, the email follow-up. And so many dynamics go into retaining guests. But my passion is let's at least think through it.
Absolutely.
Strive for it. Let's think through and strive for and pray for God. Help us to reach and keep guests. You have Nelson Searcy talks about his whole philosophy. This is pre-writing Fusion. his whole philosophy when he grew his church from 200 to 100. He talked about God said, "What have you done with the gifts, G-I-F-T-S, the gifts I've given you?" Not guests, the gifts. Mm-hmm. And so, as I said before, when people come to church, they've made a spiritual decision. So what have we done with the gifts God has given us? Have we stewarded them well? Have we thought through how people are going to experience our thing? And none of this takes away at all from preaching the gospel.
Yeah.
Yes, preach the gospel. I'm not talking about attraction. I'm not talking about consumeristic. Preach the gospel, absolutely. But there are so many factors that come into play of whether or not a guest will return. And the reason that's important, it's not about being a mega church. It's not about being attractional. It's not about being trendy. It is about stewarding the gifts, G-I-F-T-S, the gifts that God has given us.
Yeah, I love how you talk about that being a spiritual decision. You know, when they come back and it, like, that's a great grid. You know, I am curious, you know, when pastors get together, they always talk through like, what does your service look like? What service order? Yeah. So where do you think is the best spot for announcements to go? Cause that's always like, it's like the worst thing in every worship service is planning where to stick this moment. You know, and your encouragement of trying strategically, but is there a more strategic spot than another for that to happen?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do help pastors think through this. I've talked a lot about it. We did it at the conference as well, but I kind of flip the traditional model. I think the offering works best after the message. I think the announcements work best before the message. And a lot of churches flip that. They do an offering when people aren't prepared to give. They've just they haven't heard a message yet. They're still up. Their guard is not down. They're just anxious, skeptical, nervous. And you say, it's time to take an offering. You say, I knew it. They just want my money. Whereas if they have sat through a worship service and they've heard the word preached and God has ministered to their soul and to their spirit and they are at ease and they're calm and they feel loved and welcomed and appreciated and valued. People should come to our church and feel valued and respected and honored. And so they felt that. And then you talk about, hey, when you give and you have an offering afterwards, it seems to work better. Also, this is important. I'm a big, big, big believer, as Casey referenced earlier, on the connection card, the communication card. Well, if you have a checkbox that said, I made a spiritual decision, or I want to talk with a pastor, or I'm interested in baptism, or I made a faith commitment today. If you have a checkbox for that, why would you have the card be taken up before the message? And so put the offering after the message and encourage them, hey, if you made a decision today, would you let us know, fill out this connection card and put it in the offering in just a minute. And so I like the offering at the end. And then the opposite of that, if they've sat through an entire service and you stand up in the end and say, hey, there's a few things I need you to know that we have going on here. They're ready to leave. They want to get out the door. And I just had a friend joke with me earlier about this week about something of doing the announcements after the sermon. And I mean, 90% of churches do that. So I'm going to get crucified. But at my home church, we have three songs. Then we have video announcements. And then we have the sermon. And then we have a closing song. Now the
so when do they do the offering in there?
The offering is during the video announcements.
Okay.
So actually, I take that back. They have three songs, video announcements, and then one of the partners comes up and gives a little giving talk. It's just a member, a partner, or an advisory team member comes up and gives a little giving talk, and they talk about how the baskets are on one side of the auditorium and you pass them across the whole auditorium. And so there's always somebody that talks about local outreach or missions or when you give, there's a little mention. But when I met, we just got a new lead pastor. And when I met with him, he said, yeah, we're going to move the offering to the end. And so he just hasn't put his fingerprint on the church yet because he's only been there a month, but he's looking at changing the whole order up. But There's no perfect way, so please don't hear me say it has to be this formula.
Yeah.
But if you heard anything through this interview, I hope it's that you think through it. Nothing should be just thrown together. We have to be good stewards of people's times and of our gifts, and that includes members as well. And so let's sit down at a planning meeting with our team and say, when would be the best time for the offering? When would be the best time for the announcements? Personally, if your means of collecting the connection card is through the offering basket, you don't have a desk or kiosk for people to go to after the service. If you collect the cards through the offering basket, then I would do it afterwards every time.
Okay. No, that's helpful. I mean, because, you know, when, I feel like when pastors get together, we're always just sitting around going, okay, so how do you set up your worship service? You know, when do you do this? And, you know, and all that. Well, Greg, this has been, go ahead.
Personally, I learned this from Greg Surratt and Seacoast years ago back in the 90s. I like to sing after the message. I think it's something we see in scripture, Isaiah 6. I like to hear the word and then respond in music and worship. And so sometimes when you've heard, when you've been challenged for blank and then the worship team comes up and they sing a song of response, I think that can be very powerful. As opposed to the pastor saying, thank you for listening. Have a great week. Goodbye. I like to end with a song personally. I think it flows better. I also think it's a little bit more biblical and worshipful. Now, I wouldn't sign my name to a thesis saying that that's more biblical. But in my experience, I think it's very effective and worshipful to have some kind of response song after the message.
Yeah. Well, Greg, hey, we so appreciate your time. And our goal every week at Leadership Conversations is just to have conversations that leaders want to have. And so we really appreciate you giving time to our listeners this week. And so just as we wrap up, would love for you to just share with everybody how they can get more connected with you, what you're doing. I know you do a lot of different things and you're helping a lot of different churches and leaders. And so would love to be able to point them in your direction.
Yeah, I'm honored to be a guest on this, and thank you for the opportunity to share about what I do. The best way to get in touch with me is through my name, gregatkinson.com is my personal website. My email is my name, greg@gregatkinson.com. If you'd like to follow up or talk or have more questions. And then I put a lot of heart and soul and time and effort into creating the resource of the First Impressions Conference to help pastors, and we touched on everything from preaching to worship, music, children's ministry, security, assimilation, follow-up. Everything is a part of this conference. And so if you're interested in that, you can just go to firstimpressionsconference.com.
Well, Greg, thanks so much, man. We really appreciate you joining us here. I'm sure we'll have you on here again. I know you have several books coming out soon that I know our listeners would love to hear more about. But like Greg said, you can find him on gregatkinson.com, and you can find him all over the social media interwebs. So anyways, everybody, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Leadership Conversations. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to another episode of Leadership Conversations with Josh Reich and Casey Cease. If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, head on over to iTunes or Google Play to subscribe to our podcast. Also, head on over to our website at www.leaderconvos.com.